we're basically coming out of pocket $12,500. And then in 8 years, we're going to get $100,000 back. Well, what do you think the return on investment is that? That is, its compound annual ROI on this is 30%. 30%. You get $100,000 back on a $12,500 investment in 8 years. You know, we've talked about it before, the stock market, if you're an all stock, just investing in the S&P 500, you're only getting 10.8% per year. This is 30. This is almost three times as good a return on investment. And it's because of the fact that you can get in with zero or low money down using an FHA loan or a VA loan. You get cash flow throughout the process of renters paying you money. And if you're single, those first 3 years, you rent out the other two bedrooms, you might have been cash flowing from day one. Welcome to Service and Wealth, the podcast dedicated to helping military personnel master their finances and achieve financial freedom. Our mission is to guide you through the ins and outs of planning, saving, and investing. And most importantly, how to balance savings so you can enjoy life now and retire with confidence. All right, welcome back. It's another week here on the Service and Wealth Podcast. I'm your host, Ted Ehlert. I could also say producer and editor and writer and all that things. You know, I keep listening to these other podcasts and try to find like inspiration for things I should do. And I realize something I should do is I should record and then splice in some of these things I say every week, like the disclaimer or the promotion of the website or, you know, kind of like the closeout and those kind of things. And I promise I'll get there. But also, more importantly, don't really want to spend your time doing that. Would rather do other things like writing or, you know, doing blog posts or coming up with outlines for podcast ideas. The whole idea of spending in a couple hours doing it and then going back to take another couple hours to like fidget with it is, you know, it's not my favorite. So we'll just continue going lo-fi. In the year, this coming year though, in 2025, you know, I'm not calling it a resolution. We'll call it an ambition. The ambition is to find somebody who does like to do that. And then we'll improve the quality here of the podcast. And, you know, maybe we'll even find a way to get a sponsor. And that would obviously help out quite a bit. But then you'd have to listen to me plugging different products or services. And maybe that's a bit of a stretch. We can just keep it just down and dirty and to the basics. But yeah, you know, we're coming into February. It's kind of like, I don't know, when I grew up, I never thought of winter as being like February, March. It was always like from Thanksgiving through, you know, May or something. But here we are, you know, February's coming around. It's winter time. And I think back to when I was in active duty, and it was always a really kind of like sad time because, you know, you still are showing up at 06 for PT and it's pretty cold. And they're like, you're looking ahead to like Memorial Day, like 3 months into the future for like the next time you get a 4 day weekend. You know, after you come off this high of like a 4 day weekend every other week in November and December for the holidays. And, you know, but on the other hand, February is coming into, you know, like it should be a time to start getting excited, especially if you're into investing and you want to improve your life and achieve some financial goals, because we start to come into the buying season for real estate. And, you know, I hope you join me, and I hope that you stuck through all seven episodes of the mini series that we just wrapped up for real estate for folks in the military. You know, we kind of ended up by saying like, okay, you know, we've taken this all the way from like explaining what it is to how to do it to how you make money. And, you know, like in our lives right now, we're actually looking at selling a couple properties and, you know, trying to get it to market sooner than later, because once you get into late February and then March and April, that's really when people are shopping and they're trying to secure their mortgage and, you know, get a property under contract, knowing that they've got another 30 to 45 days before they're going to actually be able to close and take the keys. And, you know, so it's a good time, I think, to kind of continue talking real estate, because it's time relevant. And it's also something that, you know, we're obviously looking at. So it's on the top of my mind. And so today I just wanted to kind of talk about, or I should say respond to some of the critiques that we got, you know, got some DMs, critiques about the series on real estate, just kind of bemoaning or complaining about like the affordability of housing, and it's just not practical. And there was a lot of, you know, kind of like good natured back and forth of being like, well, you say that, but, you know, like as a field grade officer, like you were making this much money, and like that's a lot more than junior officers or NCOs, staff NCOs, than what they're making or like their BAH. And so I just continue to have like sort of this intuition that like that's not the case, right? Like that's somebody who's kind of, you know, if you think you can afford to become a homeowner early in your military career, or you're telling people that they can't, I think it's just because you're not looking at it the right way. And so today I wanted to just kind of come back, and I spent a few hours just kind of like drilling for the Army, the Air Force, the Navy, the Marines, and looking at the affordability. And really, this episode is about saying like, no, I'm going to show you that you can go out and be a homeowner. You can be, and then transition it into a real estate investor today, even today, despite the headlines, right? And so that's what today's episode is about. Before we go any further along, again, just want to thank everybody who's downloading and listening to the podcast for your support, and hope you continue to find good value in the show. And the challenge is every week, find somebody in your life, whether it's at the office, in the barracks, down at the ready room, in the squadron, in the at the ramp, or even just in your family, right? Like maybe your partner or your best friend or your mom and dad or a cousin, somebody who could really benefit from improving their financial education and boosting their financial IQ. And send them a link, share that episode that you liked or that you thought that they could really get some value from, and ask them to subscribe and download and give us a like or a review. And, you know, while you're at it, remind them that we got a website, www.militarywealthcoach.com, and you can go over there and you can opt in for our mailing, weekly mailing, which I'm behind schedule on that the last couple weeks, but we'll get back in routine here, get the battle rhythm going again. And you can also sign up for a free 45 to 50 minute video chat with me as the military wealth coach, and we can talk about anything that's on your mind, any challenges you're trying to solve. That's what we're here for. And before we get into it, you know, the standard disclaimer: this show is educational in nature. It's not meant to be legal, tax, or financial advice. As always, do your own research, because all kinds of investing carries risk. Make your own decisions, and then best of all, own the decisions and the consequences and learn from them. Do better, right? Okay, so there's a headline that popped up in my feed, and man, it's a while ago. I'm always getting headlines and different links to articles to read about real estate and housing. And so this is going back a full year ago, January 29th, 2024. Buying a home is not even remotely possible for many Americans, says Moody's chief economist. You know, they go on to talk about how even though interest rates and mortgage rates have come back down under 7%, and, you know, a year ago, the average home price was $400,000, now it's $420,000, $430,000. You know, so things have changed a little bit, but not a whole lot from a year ago. And you actually see almost a carbon copy of this headline from this past January. again, saying home buying is beyond the means of most American households, you know, and I thought to myself, well, that's, you know, kind of depressing. There's all these headlines out there that say you can't afford to buy a home. Well, there's some other depressing headlines out there that go along with it when it comes to housing. And here's one that is showing that rent prices have been rising faster than income, and some cases almost four times faster than income since COVID, since 2020, which means, you know, if you read our book or you followed us here in the podcast or the blog, we are always talking about how average wage growth over the past century in America has only been about 2.7%. And historically, we know that rents have gone up about 3 to 5%. So they've always been a little bit higher than wage growth. But if you're in a dual income household, if you and your partner, your spouse are both working and you both get raises, that should cover it. But what we've been seeing is, and it's almost a generational trend. So I'm looking at this article and it says from 1985 to 2020. So, you know, that's basically if you're a millennial, by the time you hit your mid-30s and you're ready to like launch out and buy a home, start a family, it says over that period, rent prices increased 150% and income grew just 35%. You know, and that's continued where income has been going up at about, it was growing at about 5 or 6% for like 2021, 2022, as employers are trying to keep up with the inflation, and it's started to come back down now to 3 or 4%. Whereas rents, you know, rents were going up like 10, 20% in 2020, 2021, 2022. People needed housing. They needed more housing. They needed home offices. And so we have these competing headlines that are hitting the news almost every week showing that it's impossible, almost impossible for the average American to buy a home and that rent is going through the roof, right? And it's like being between a rock and a hard place. Okay, so am I going to spend all my BAH on rent? Or should I go and buy a house and I'm still spending all my BAH, you know? And that's really the challenge. And a lot of times the easy way and the thing that, you know, I did as an uneducated, uninformed, you know, second lieutenant, first lieutenant is I was like, yeah, I'll rent a room from somebody else, you know? And I was just helping that person pay their mortgage. They had the courage and they took the bold move of buying. And then they picked up a $1,500 a month mortgage, and then they charged me $750 to rent a bedroom. I was paying half their mortgage. It's a pretty good deal for them, right? But for me, that was, you know, $8,000 a year in rent that I'll never see again. Contrast that to what if I had, you know, had the foresight, what if I had a mentor or the education to actually buy a house? I could have bought a house, inherited a $1,500 a month mortgage, rented out a room to $750 for some other second lieutenant. And guess what? Now my out of pocket was $750, right? It's the exact same as I was paying in rent, $750. My budget would not have changed. The difference would have been that I would have gotten the benefits of being a homeowner. I would have gotten, you know, to deduct my property taxes, deduct mortgage interest. When I had to, you know, moved out and moved on and PCS'd, I could have rented out the property to a full family and charged, you know, $1,500, $1,750, $2,200, whatever the going rents were. And they would have paid for that entire cost of that house. But now I get additional benefits of them paying down my mortgage. I would get depreciation that I could claim for other tax breaks. And over the years, you know, there's a decade plus, and it's probably the one thing I regret about my time in the military is I didn't actually take advantage of an FHA loan or a VA loan early on in my career, even when the budget just didn't seem like I could hack it, because I could have. And that's the whole point is you're not buying a house and taking on a $2,000 mortgage and living there by yourself. And you're not, so you can't compare that to renting a studio apartment or a one bedroom apartment or getting a roommate and renting a two bedroom apartment and only paying $1,000. Right? Because it's apples and oranges. And if you buy the house, just rent out the room, get your own roommates, and you'll find that your expenses are the same. And so that's really the kind of like vision that we're trying to cultivate here. And, you know, so we can kind of get ourselves out from between this rock and a hard place. Now, why is it that we're special? You know, we're here active duty or retired, guard, reserves. You have access to entitlements, either in cash from the government, like your housing allowance, or to things like the VA loan, which allow you to potentially pay 0% down on a house or 5% down on a house without having to jump through any extra hoops or have a better credit score. If you have a great credit score, though, you don't need the VA loan to get a low down payment conventional 30-year loan. You can do 10% down. So when we talk about the affordability crisis of purchasing a house and why you see all the headlines that say you can't do it and people, you're hearing people all around you in your life saying it's impossible, well, they're talking about the average American. They're not talking about the military community. And if that's where you're getting your advice, it's not appropriate, right? It's not specific for you. When you look at, you know, there's this great, I'm on this this website. It's Zocasa or Zucasa. I'm not sure how you say it. There looks like a little dot in there that you should pronounce. But what they've done is they've gone across and they've taken the top 50 cities scattered across all the entire country. So, you know, there's multiple cities in California on the list, but there's multiple in Texas. But you also have things like, you know, Baltimore, Maryland, Wichita, Kansas, Buffalo, New York, Tucson, Arizona. What's some other interesting one? Portland, Maine. Well, Jacksonville, Florida's on there. Albuquerque, New Mexico. You know, so they kind of go all over the place. And then they look at what's the median single-family home price. And let's assume that you qualify for a 15% down payment. How much do you have to have for that down payment? And what's the household income there? And then they figure out if you had a reasonable savings rate, something like 10% of your income per year, how long would it take you to save up enough for a down payment to buy a house? And why do they say 10%? Well, you're saving for other things too, right? And we've talked a little bit about it on the show. We're really going to break it open in the Ultimate Military Retirement Plan book that we'll have published later this spring and in a series of podcasts that go with it to support the launch. But if you're already saving about 20% of your income for retirement and you want to save another like 10% of your income for investments and other like, you know, non-retirement wealth that you want to build up, you can use now, and then you save another 10% for a future house, you're saving at 40%, right? And now you're already at that sort of like 40-40-20 rule for the military. It says you should live on 40% of your income, and you should save 40% of your income, and then 20% is left over for taxes. And if you don't pay 20% in taxes, then you get yourself a little year-end bonus. And, you know, inside scoop, like insider trader, you know, or the dope on it is if you're in the military, you're probably going to pay more like 10 or 12% taxes because you don't get taxed on BAH. So you're in a lower tax bracket, which is a great deal. But anyway, you know, the 40% savings target is like the magic, the silver bullet man with a golden gun, whatever you want to call it. It's like what you should be shooting for. And about half of that needs to go for retirement, just to make sure that you hit those numbers, which we'll talk about on another show. So saving 10% of your income every year for a future home purchase is a reasonable number. Now, if you're in a market like Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, where the average home price is $250,000 and you got to come up with about $40,000 as a down payment, it's going to take you 6 years of savings if you're just the typical, you know, American household. Why? Because you've got to have about, you know, $5,000 or $10,000 in closing costs, and you got to have about $35,000 to $40,000 in down payment. So you're saving, you know, $10,000 a year for 6 years, and that'll get you enough to buy a house. We can look at some other cities here, you know, Birmingham, Alabama, you know, $300,000. So you need about 45 down, 55 to close. But the average income there is only 42K. And so if you're in Birmingham, Alabama, it's going to take you 11 years to save that up. And when it comes down to it, the average household across all these cities, the average household has to save about 8 years. They have to save 10% of their income for 8 years to buy a house. That's two enlistments, right? If you're an officer, that means you're like, you're through a B billet, you're back doing like a key billet and grade, and you're thinking about whether or not you want to like make a 20-year career out of this. That's a long time. And I keep saying you can do it in the first 2 or 3 or 4 years you're in the military. You can, and by 8 years, you should have at least 2, if not 3 properties in your name. Why is that? Well, you don't have to come up with this $30,000 to $60,000 down payment, especially if you're using an FHA loan followed by like a 5% down VA loan, right? Now, that's going to cut your savings rates down tremendously, and you're going to be able to every 2 or 3 years have enough cash while still saving for retirement to buy a house. And that's why these headlines, you can kind of look at them and you can say, you know what, I've got an inside line on that and I'm not as worried. And so let's take a look at then if we can ignore like the big down payment and you can, you know, I guess another thing we should acknowledge is you could go on a deployment and in that one deployment, come home with $20,000, $30,000, or $40,000 in cash because you had no living expenses. But you were still collecting all of your pay and benefits, and you weren't paying any taxes, right? So, if you deploy once every 2 or 3 years, you could have enough money just from each deployment to buy a house, and you could even do this faster. But anyway, so going back to how to figure out like again the affordability. So we've already identified that just for being in the military and following a strategy of your first home purchase, you use an FHA loan with 3.5% down, and then your next home purchase, if it's an expensive market, you could go ahead and use a VA loan and do 0 or 5% down. If it's a relatively affordable market, don't use your VA loan. Go out and use a conventional loan and save that VA loan for later. And then with the conventional loan, you could pay 10% down or 15% down if you have to, but 10% down is fair. And so you kind of get over this hurdle of having to spend 8 years of saving cash. You can do it in like 2 or 3 or 4. But then next up, you know, you've got to get over this, you know, shiny brand new home. You know, like, what do they call it? Like Zillow porn? Is that what housing porn? I forget what it was called during during COVID lockdowns when everybody's like, oh, I'm just here like, you know, searching Zillow, like, I think it was like house hunting porn or something, like just people looking at all these houses and like you always get suckered into the ones that have the best photos and the new appliances and the granite countertops that are way overpriced, you know, like somebody made them look nice. Somebody put $50,000 in renovations into a $150,000 house. So they're $200,000 all in and they're going to ask $350,000 for it and you're going to pay it because it looks nice and the bank tells you you can afford it. But what we keep saying is, no, you pick a budget for a house based on the monthly payment. And how do you do that? Well, the first way you can do is you can just take what's called the 30% rule or the rule of 30. And that says you take your pre-tax household income and 30% of it is what you should spend on housing. And that means like the mortgage plus insurance plus property taxes and utilities. So whatever you're paying on your mortgage payment plus your utilities, right? So if you do the math today on a VA loan, if you get a VA loan or FHA loan at 5.99%, which is definitely doable in most places and for most people in the military, a $250,000 house, if you pay 0% down, you're looking at about a $1,750 mortgage. And you can add an extra $250 in there for utilities and say that your a monthly housing budget of $2,000 will be kind of the limit to get a $250,000 house. Now, if you're you're doing 3.5% down on an FHA loan or 5% or 10% down on a VA loan or a conventional loan, you know, then you can afford more house, right? Because you're only borrowing $250,000. So now you can afford like a $265,000 or $280,000 house because you're just paying for to borrow $250,000. But if that's your monthly budget of $2,000 for housing, well, by the 30% rule, that is, it works out to $24,000 a year. And the 30% rule says your household income should be $80,000. Okay. Well, who's making $80,000 in the military? Well, if you're an E3 with 3 years experience and you've gotten married and you or your partner's pregnant or you got a little one, right? So you're going to qualify for BAH. You're going to be eligible for either base housing or to take your BAH and go off and live in town and buy a house for yourself. You know, you're making about $34,000 base. And even in the lower markets, you know, I was just looking at 29 Palms and Fort Liberty, North Carolina. See, I got it right. New name for that installation. I got that right. You're getting, and there you're getting about $1,900 or $2,000 a month in BAH. And so that brings you up to about $60,000. So if your partner is working and they bring in $20,000, which is not much, $20,000, that's, you know, some part-time work, not too tough to manage, then you're most definitely making $80,000, and this is affordable. Once you step up and you're an E5, an E5 is making about, let's see, let's take a look at that. You know, they're still getting $24,000 a year in BAH or more in most of these markets. And an E5 now is looking at making about $40,000. So they're in like the 65 total. So on your own, you're still coming up a little bit short. An E6 is definitely locked in, pretty much every warrant officer and every officer. So if you're a warrant or you're a commissioned officer from day one, when you add your BAH to your base pay, you're over $80,000 and you can afford, by the rule of 30, you can afford $2,000 a month for housing, which means you can afford to go out and either do a 0% down VA loan, a 3.5% FHA loan, a 5% down VA loan, or 10% conventional loan, and buy a house that's $250,000 to $260,000, you'll have a total monthly housing cost of less than $2,000. So you'll be fitting in with that budget just fine. Now, most people are like, yeah, but where are you going to find a house for $250,000? Like, I've seen the headlines, the average house in America costs, you know, $420,000, $430,000. Well, this is where I wanted to do a deep dive, right? And what I did is, you know, in the last episode, I talked about Waco, Texas, where a 2,800 four-bed, three-bath, you had three options. You could spend $450,000 for like the super nice one. You could spend $350,000 for one that's like 80% super nice. Or you could spend $240,000 for one that's half nice and needs a little bit of elbow grease. So I was like, well, I've already found that in Texas, whether it's Waco or San Antonio or anywhere, Houston, you can find really nice three bed, two baths for $250,000 or less, which means you can afford to buy that house. So then I was like, well, let's go to my first duty station. Let's go back to 29 Palms, California. And lo and behold, there is just pages of Zillow listings with three bed, two bath houses from $225,000 to $280,000, right? So again, all of these houses are going to, with whichever financing, they're all in the ballpark of what you can afford. 1,700 square feet, a 3.2 for $250,000, done. And I was like, well, you know, what about all my former students who went down to Virginia Beach? Well, here's a nice 2.2 condo that's two blocks from the beach. They got a pool in the complex, $245,000. If you go over to Norfolk or Newport News, then your range of options goes way up, and you can get a 3-2 for $245,000. Then I went out here to Tacoma, Washington, right outside of Joint Base Lewis McChord, one of the biggest Air Force bases and joint bases in the U.S. And there's, for $250 on the nose, there's a 3-bed, 2-bath house, 1,700 square feet with attached garage. It's got new flooring, new paint. It's a great house. It's really beautiful, and you'd be super stoked to live there. But again, $250,000. Rapid City, outside of Ellsworth Air Force Base, another major Air Force installation. Between $220,000 and $260,000, there's dozens of options. Again, 3-2s from 1,200 up to almost 2,000 square feet. Outside of Fort Liberty, down in Fayetteville, North Carolina, I found a super nice, super updated 3-bed, 2-bath. They don't have the square footage on there, but that's $255,000. For $240,000, you can get an 1,800 square foot 3-bed, 3-bath with attached garage. Again, so this mid 200s, like, are you going to get the newest cabinets? Are you going to get painted cabinets, a bespoke Samsung smart refrigerator, granite countertops, stainless steel, everything? No, you're not going to get that. But you're going to get a super livable, relatively updated, really quality home in all these communities. And so all that we're really saying here is that if you know how to put together a plan and a budget for housing and not go to the loan officer at the bank and say, tell me what I can afford, you know what you're shooting for, which is, $2,000 or less. And the reason why I still think that's really reasonable in the military is, we said if you're like a young E5, E4, E3, married with dependents, getting BAH, you're going to fall short on your own of hitting that income threshold. But by the end of the second enlistment, you're going to be making enough where that makes sense. And if your partner's got a side hustle or doing a part-time job or anything like that and bringing in just $15,000 to $20,000 a year, or if you go on a deployment and earn an extra $15,000 or $20,000 a year from hazardous duty pay and, just cash savings, you're going to be able to do it. So there's a majority of folks in uniform can realistically set this monthly budget of $2,000 and qualify for a loan to go out and get, like a $250,000 house. And yet there's still this temptation to say, like, well, I think it's just easier or cheaper to rent. And so I was like, I had to prove to myself that I'm not crazy, because there was a time, we are renting right now because we're living overseas. And let me tell you, don't complain about rents in America until you come live in Europe for a while, where rent is out of control. It's like rent in every European country and city is like living in LA or New York, but I wanted to make sure that the headlines were kind of matching up with reality. And because we have these headlines that say nobody can afford to buy a house, and also saying rents are going way up and it's out of control. And so I was looking at rents in all of these markets, and one bedrooms in Virginia Beach are going for $1,300 to $1,700 bucks, and two bedrooms are over $2,000. It's the same if you go to Tacoma. You're going to be paying $2,200 for a 2-bedroom, 2-bath house to rent, $2,600 for a 3-2. If you go to Rapid City, South Dakota, $2,600, $1,800, $1,600, $2,300. Over here in, Waco, Texas, 2-2s are pretty much $1,600 and up. So all that's to say, you could rent a property for only a little bit less than you could pay a mortgage. And if you're going to rent a property and split it and have a roommate, why not own it and split it and get a roommate? Now you get all the benefits of home ownership and equity and mortgage pay down. And in the long run, you'll have an investment property that you can rent out. So really, with how much rents have come up in the last 3 to 4 years, and really the last 35 years, but especially the last 3 or 4 years, the trade-off is you get about the same house, whether owning or renting, for the same budget. In which case, I argue it's a no-brainer to buy. But, you know, I don't just want you to take my word for it because, you know, I obviously, like, I'm trying to sell everybody in the military and becoming a homeowner. But the numbers don't lie. And I think that's what, you know, can be convincing, especially if you're feeling intimidated or a little, you know, trigger shy when it comes to actually getting in the game and purchasing real estate. And there, that's understandable, right? There's some pretty big hurdles. And like the three real big ones are obviously like the cash to make a purchase. That'd be number one. That's super practical. Number two would be sort of like your beliefs. And, you know, if you believe that that's out of reach, if you believe that that investing in real estate is somehow bad because your parents or your aunt and uncle lost their shirts in back in 2006 and 7 and 8 as a result of like a very, you know, a very once in 100 years type, if not once in forever type, you know, failure in terms of regulations and the housing market. So, you know, you can't help it if you're, well, you can't help it, but it's difficult to overcome if your belief is that real estate is risky or like not for you or you can't handle it. You really just have to come around sort of like a flanking maneuver on that one to overcome, which is by attacking the third major hurdle, which is knowledge. And so, you know, we kind of look at it, obviously, as a channel and as a brand dedicated to improving the financial education of everyone in the military, including retired guard and reserves, is we don't try to necessarily just come at it and say, like, you've got to believe us, like, stop thinking this. What we're coming at is providing the education, and you can absorb it. And when you absorb it, and it's backed up by, like, hard numbers to kind of, like, prove to you that things are possible and practical and profitable, then you can overcome those beliefs, right? And if you don't overcome the beliefs, like, you'll probably never do it, right? And I think a good example of that is, you know, after losing all my savings in the dot-com bubble, losing half my savings in the Great Recession in 08 and 09, you know, I had a belief that, like, there was no way a regular person could get ahead by buying stocks and investing in the U.S. stock market or international, if, you know, you're into that. And so for several years, I just didn't start, you know, I didn't invest anymore. You know, I just bought stuff and I had some cash. I didn't save for retirement. And it was because I believed that it was too risky. And I believed that I had bad luck. I believe that it was not a way to, like, grow your wealth. Like, you would just save up that money and then poof, it would disappear. But eventually I got over that hurdle by reading a lot of books, by starting to get back in the game, by investing, by taking my mistakes I'd learned before and turning them into various defensive measures in my portfolio with stop loss limit, you know, orders, open contracts in there so that if there was a major drop in the market or a stock, like, it could be sold. Playing around with, you know, protective puts and options in the portfolio for the similar reason. And, you know, then over time, and, you know, obviously a little bit of luck, like the 2010s were gangbusters. Like, a lot of people are saying we're going into the roaring 20s, a continuation of the last decade. And if so, then, you know, that's all the proof you'll need. But my point is, like, the belief held me back longer than the lack of knowledge or the lack of seeing the numbers and understanding what they meant. But I really had to use, like, reinforce the knowledge, look at the numbers, run them again before I could, like, overcome those fears and uncertainty and doubt or FUD. And, you know, with real estate, it's kind of the same thing. So I want to wrap up this episode by just continuing on with the same sort of examples, but I've really dived down into it and want to show some real numbers to help explain this. Okay. And so what I did is I was like, you know what, I'm going to take Rapid City, South Dakota, which is near Ellsworth Air Force Base. I chose that because it's a relatively small market out in the middle of the Great Plains, which means that there's not a ton of stuff going on. It doesn't have like the volatility of the coasts. It doesn't have the super high prices of the coasts. You know, if you're stationed in Norfolk with the Navy or whatever other units might be out there, if you want to buy in Virginia Beach, you can buy a condo for $220,000, or you can buy a house for like $600,000. If you're in Seattle, Tacoma, if you're in San Diego, you know, those coasts, it's expensive to get a house. But you can buy things like condos. But then condos have association fees and like that, you know, it got a little complicated. So I wanted to just say, like, let's look at a house. Let's look at a $250,000 house, the average starter house, nonetheless, right? And we've talked about that before. And that's what makes it really important as well, is like, you don't really, you know, I'm kind of like paraphrasing Beth Dutton from Yellowstone saying, like, nobody wants to be a condo owner. You know, we own a condo and that's fine. But when you think about becoming a real estate investor and a homeowner, you're kind of thinking of your own home with your own yard. You don't have an association that you're paying like $200 or $300 a month for them to insure your neighbor's balcony, right? Or to plow snow. Like, you can grab a shovel and clear the snow away in 15 minutes instead of paying, you know, through the nose. So nobody really dreams of having a condo. So I wanted to find a single family home, 3-bedroom, 2-bath. It's 1,600 square feet. So this is basically the exact cookie cutter starter home in America in 2025. The difference in this market, this one costs $245,000. The average starter home, when you take into account like the high octane coastal markets, is $370,000. So you can see, like, when you're in a military city, you're not, you know, like the real estate prices aren't so inflated. And so, you know, what we can do is we can look at this and we can take this house and then we can look at rentals and what it would rent for. And, you know, that's a great advantage that we have in the military. Is, think about it this way. If you're a civilian and you move to Lafayette, Louisiana, you don't know anybody there. Like, you move there for your job. You don't know anybody there. When you go to your job and then you move on to the next one, there's not any sort of, like, you know, family connection, trust, loyalty, you know, semper fidelis, as we like to say, with the people in that community. Like, you leave and you keep on going. When you're in the military, you come into a community that is a military community. It's military friendly. You have a network built in. You're going to meet people at your unit who have been there for like 2, 3, 4 years, and they're going to help you like find the neighborhood, pick the house. When you leave, those are people who will be there when you're gone, and you can continue to trust them. And, you know, the great thing is, like, instead of paying a property manager 10% of the rent, you know, if you charge $2,000 in rent, the property manager is going to keep $200 to watch over your property. But 10 months out of the year, all they're going to do is collect the rent, take their $200, and send you the $1,800. And you're going to be like, oh, okay, well, that covers my mortgage, but I'm not making anything because the property manager is making all my profit. But in this day and age, like, all you do is you can go through Zillow, you can go through apartments.com, totally free property manager, landlord sites. And what's better is you advertise your own property on there. People apply. You get their applications. They pay like $20 to do a credit check, background check. So you get the results of that as well. You can do for $20, or I'm sorry, for free for you, because the applicants pay for it, free for you. You can do the entire screening that the property manager would do, right? And then, you know, what do? You have a really good friend who's at the unit. They're going to be there a couple more years after you PCS away. You just say, hey, bro, hey, babe, hey, bud, like, whatever you want to call them. Well, I'm gone. If something comes up, like the tenant can't, they break a thermostat or they need help changing a light bulb, or, you know, you're pretty handy. Can I throw you like $50 to go over there if it ever happens? or if like I'm worried because they're not paying rent and they're not answering my calls, you know, could you swing by and like check in on the place and make sure they haven't like burned it down? You'll find somebody who'll help you out like that, right? And compare that to giving up 10% of your rent and like all your potential profit. So it's a great example of how being in the military has more ways than one, or more ways than six, that you can earn money and make money through real estate. And so, you know, one thing else I was thinking about is I'm always troubled by this, is like the practicality, or, you know, how achievable or accessible this idea is, right? And if you're appealing to like officers, you know, O1s and above, and on the warrant side of the house, I guess, you know, you'd want to say like pretty much, yeah, I mean, all warrant officers are making at least as much as O1s, commissioned officers. So you're all kind of in the safe zone. And then it's really like an E5 once they hit, you know, year six, an E5 base pay is the same. And, you know, in E6 at year six, they're making slightly more. And so we have this sort of cutoff of like, all of these things are super practical and reachable for anyone who's an officer, a commissioned officer, a warrant officer, or like an E5 on the, you know, after 6 years of service, you're all going to be making the same amount of money. And so it's super achievable. But what about, you know, like the 2/3 of the military who are E4s and below? Well, it's a little bit more of a stretch, right? And especially because essentially if you're single, there's really no chance you're going to be living out in town, out of the barracks. And that's a huge chunk of the population. But there's a not small percent of junior enlisted, you know, E1s, probably not E1s, but like there's a lot of E3s out there who are like married and with families, E4s married with families. And as we said earlier, you know, E3 with dependents is going to be making right around $55,000 to $60,000 if they take the BAH option and go out in town. And so if their partner is just earning another $20,000, which is, you know, minimum wage if that's all they're doing, but maybe they've got a slightly better job, you know, office job or nursing job or truck driver, you know, like something that pays a little bit more, you should easily be earning enough to make this affordable. And what I also looked at, you know, real quick was like two E3s. I was thinking back to my time in the fleet and like the E3s who would get married, and there were, you know, there were a handful of them, you know, maybe like 10% of, that's maybe stretching it. Let's not hold me to that. But if you're an E3 and your partner is an E3, you're married and you're both pulling, you know, now you have a family, so you can get authorized to like live off base and collect BAH. Between the two of you, you're going to be making $68,000 base pay plus another $42,000 on average, or at a minimum, in BAH. You're a six-figure household. You're making $110,000 a year, which is 30% better than the average American household, right? The average American household in 2024 made only $76,000. So I'm not saying like every E3 run out there and like, you know, marry or get in a civil union with your boyfriend, girlfriend, partner, best friend, like we, just to do that. But the point is to show like it's a lot more accessible. Real estate is a lot more accessible than you might think. And the key, the reason why we're bringing that all up, the key is that if you're junior enlisted, if you're single, you can't get out of the barracks. It's kind of like written into law, unless there's zero housing available, and then they have to let you and they have to give you BAH. And then, you know, also obviously from a budget standpoint, like if all you're getting is base pay, $3,000 a month or $2,500 a month, like you're not making enough to qualify for a mortgage, let alone cover the payment, right? So I understand like there's a big chunk of the military out there that this doesn't quite work for, unless you're married, unless you have a side hustle. I had a whole bunch of Marines who on the weekends, they would, you know, drive for Uber Eats. They'd drive for DoorDash. They would work as bouncers at nightclubs. They had jobs working in barbershops and, you know, restaurants and all that kind of stuff. And when you're doing that, you actually are bringing in enough income to consider qualifying for a mortgage. Okay. So all that aside is to say, like, this is a super practical, you know, we've already found that you can go to almost any military community and find a nice minimum 2-2, but like a three bed, two bath house, 4 bed, 2 bath house, 1500, 2000, 2500 square feet, all the amenities you want for $250,000 or less. And here we are in South Dakota. So the lowest BAH you're going to get is a little over $1,700. And if you do a zero down, and again, you know, we're encouraging you to do a 3.5% FHA loan down for your first one and save that VA loan for your second one. But let's just assume you're doing a 0% down VA loan. What's that going to look like? You know, and in this case, you're going to have, you're going to borrow $250,000 to buy this house. It's the principal and interest is going to cost you $1,500 a month. You're going to pay $165 a month in property tax, $66 a month in homeowners insurance. And remember, there's no primary mortgage insurance when you use a VA loan. So you're all in for $1,728. So your BAH basically covers your mortgage. You're going to have to come out of pocket for utilities. But if you're living in the barracks last year, or you're living in the dorms in college last year, you were already paying for your mobile plan and you're already paying for internet, probably, maybe. You're already paying for some other things. So you only have to add, you know, another maybe $200 a month for gas and electric and trash and water, right? So your BAH isn't going to cover 100% of it if you are like an E3 and below, in which case it's $1,700. But if you're an E5 and up or an O1 or a W1, you're going to be getting in this market, you're getting $2,000 or more in BAH every month. And so that's going to cover not only your mortgage, but it's also going to cover your utilities, right? And so you're really set. And so here, that's how we get to like the $1,728 a month payment breakdown. And if we look at it, you know, in per year, it's going to cost you $20,736 in mortgage payments, which is, it's covered by your BAH. So it's a net of zero. The great thing about the 30-year fixed mortgage in the United States, even a 15-year fixed, is that payment never changes. And so if we assume that you're going to hold on to this thing for 8 years, so you're going to live in it for 3 years, maybe four, if you, you know, get extended, and then you're going to hold on to it and sell it at the end of 8 years. You can do it however long you want, but I just chose eight because it's kind of like a common holding period. That mortgage is going to be $1,728 per month every single month of that 8 years. It's not going to go up. As your base pay goes up, as your BAH goes up, as you put renters in there and start getting rental income, that mortgage is never going up. And once you move out, your renters are going to pay the utilities, right? So you're not going to carry those costs with you. But that means that per year, there's going to be $21,000 basically paid off against the mortgage. And how does that break down? Well, okay, so that's, you know, that's $170,000. And the way mortgages are amortized, which means how they break down the payments between principal and interest, is that they front load the interest because that's how the banks make their profit. So you're going to be paying a lot more interest up front than you will at the end of the loan. And so over those 8 years, of the $180,000 that's been paid to the bank, only $30,000 is going to have paid down the amount you owe. And so that means that after 8 years on this $250,000 loan, you're still going to owe $220,000. But the good news is of that $30,000 in principal over 8 years, because you moved out after 3 years and brought tenants in, the tenants paid $21,000 of that. So your mortgage balance goes from 250 down to 220, and you only paid down $9,000 on that. What does that mean? Well, that means when you sell this property, you're going to get $21,000 of additional profit off of your tenants, right? You didn't see it month to month in years 4 through 8 because they were giving you the rent and then you were paying the bank. But because it was paying the principal down, when you sell, you get that money back, all right? And so what you can really do is, from a cash flow standpoint, and sorry, I should interrupt myself real quickly to say that in, you know, this house that we're looking at, $245,000, just down the street, literally 5 blocks away, there is a 3-bed, 2-bath for rent for $2,300. Now there's also some that are renting around $1,800. Okay. So this is a little bit newer property, which means that there's a good chance that you can get closer to $2,000 in rent. And, you know, there's nothing guaranteed, but the numbers at least make sense that you're going to be able to collect rent that's over and above what your, you know, what your mortgage is. And so if we keep going with this, we're going to make some other assumptions. All right. So we're going to assume for the first 3 years, your BH, you get it, you pay it out, pay the mortgage. You're paying down the principal a little bit. And after 3 years, tenants come in, they start paying you rent. And we're just going to start them out at $2,000 a month. We're going to assume that rents go up about 5% per year, which is on average pretty normal. But we're going to do it every other year. We're not going to do it every year. So we're going to be a little conservative. And so in the 8th year, you're getting $2,200 a month. Well, that your margin on your mortgage has gone from, in the first year as a landlord, making $272 a month, all the way up to making $472 a month. Now, if you use some smart, you know, property management landlording tricks, and each month you take the rents and you put 5% of the rent into a savings account for any maintenance that could come up, and you put 8% into that, you know, the same or different savings account to help cover your cash flow when you have to move out a tenant and move a new one in. If you adjust for that, you still are going to make $2,840 your first year in net cash flow, your first year as a landlord. Your last year as a landlord, you're going to be making almost $5,000. $4,927.68 is going to be your cash flow. So in those 5 years as being a landlord, you're going to make over $18,000. Now, why does that matter? Well, we already said that you're going to make a little bit of money back from them when you sell. And so the question is, what is this total investment worth for you? And what's your return on the investment? So we also have to look at the value of the property, which we've covered it before. In America, on average, property goes up 3.5% per year. So after 8 years, your $250,000 house should be worth $330,000. Not bad, right? We already said you owe $220 on the mortgage. So you sell it for $330,000, you owe $220,000, and it's, you know, it's reasonable to assume for closing costs that you're gonna pay about $20,000. Is that? Yeah, we'll say $20,000 is when you sell it is going to be your closing cost, because you have to pay the agent's commissions for the seller's agent and the buyer's agent, and you have to pay it for like a seller's title insurance and maybe one other thing, right? And we could even round it up. Let's go crazy. Let's say you don't even get $300,000, you get $325,000, and your closing costs are $25,000. So you net $300,000. Pay off the $220,000 of the bank, and that's $80,000 profit. That $80,000 you add to it the $18,000 in rental profit that you made as a landlord. And we, you know, we're rounding here. So let's just say that's $100,000 that you make after 8 years by having chosen to purchase this property, live in it, and then rent it out. Well, how much did it cost you to get it up front, right? And you use the VA loan, which is all good. You're going to have a funding fee. You're going to have to pay in advance. You're going to have to pay some property tax in advance, an appraisal fee in advance. You probably have to pay for a credit report. You'll have to pay for homeowner's insurance. And, you know, on average, you want to safely plan for about, I think, anywhere from 3 to 6% as a buyer is a good range to estimate your closing costs when buying a property. But in this case, you know, it comes out to about $10,000. And I just got that. You can go to mortgagecalculator.org and they have a VA loan funding fee calculator, and you can put in everything that you need to, from the loan amount all the way down to the funding fee, first time user, second time user, are you disabled? I take that back. They don't have the disabled bit, but you know, it's telling us that about you have about $10,000 that you're going to owe in order to purchase this house. So $10,000 at close, which is going to cover loan costs, escrow, which is money that you have to pay in advance for property tax or insurance, and then anything else that the lender sets. So the calculator says 10, but again, let's not try to make the numbers look super perfect. Let's add another $2,500 in there for additional prepaids, which could be additional prepaid taxes or insurance. So in our sort of like rough estimate here, we're basically coming out of pocket $12,500. And then in 8 years, we're going to get $100,000 back. Well, what do you think the return on investment is that is? Its compound annual ROI on this is 30%. 30%. You get $100,000 back on a $12,500 investment in 8 years. You know, we've talked about it before, the stock market, if you're an all stock, just investing in the S&P 500, you're only getting 10.8% per year. This is almost three times as good a return on investment. And it's because of the fact that you can get in with zero or low money down using an FHA loan or a VA loan. You get cash flow throughout the process of renters paying you money. And if you're single, those first 3 years, you rent out the other two bedrooms, you might have been cash flowing from day one, and in which case your ROI and your total profit's only going up. And think about it now. You're going to be able to, in 8 years, if you get out after two enlistments or you get out, you know, after 8 years as an officer, you could sell this and have $100,000 go into your bank account to help you transition into the next phase of life, whether that's buying, you know, putting in, you know, a down payment on your next purchase to start your family, or investing in yourself to go get some schooling over and above what the GI Bill will fund, or perhaps it's starting your own business. It's enough capital to start your own business. And the cost to you to have that $100,000 was you just had to save up $12,500 to buy it in the first place. And how long does that take? Well, that's about $1,000 a month, which might be a little bit of a stretch for any military budget, just at the start, any E5, O1, W1. But $500, that's not a stretch. And you could do that in 2 years. $750, you could do it in 18 months. If you deploy, or if you have an enlistment bonus or a signing bonus, some sort of incentive, or if you went through a service academy or ROTC type program and you have access to a career starter loan from USAA or Navy Federal, you're going to be getting $32,000 at basically 0% interest. You know, take $10,000, buy a car, take $12,500, set it aside to go buy a house, put $5,000 in emergency savings, and then take $5,000 to like have fun and live your life, right? And now you're a homeowner, you own a car with no car payment, you have an emergency savings fund, and you're off to the races. You move in two roommates, they pay your mortgage. You're living large, right? And so, and that, again, that works for a huge swath of the military, pretty much E5s and up. Or if there's like a dual income, you know, married junior enlisted couple, same thing. Your kind of threshold for this is you want to have a household income before taxes of $80,000. That way you can spend 30% on housing, which is about $2,000 a month on housing. Buy a $250,000 house. Your mortgage is $1,800. You got another $250 that you can pay to your utilities. Everything is, this is just smart budgeting. Everything is totally well managed. And it's a, like I said, it's a no-brainer. So, all right, we're going to wrap it up today. And just want to invite everybody to do two things. One, head over to the blog this week. We've got a post up there where we talk about the different ways that being in the military gives you an advantage when it comes to making money through real estate. And you can study that and kind of take notes or print it out. And then the other thing is, find somebody in your family, your friend group, your unit, at, you know, if you're a poolie or a candidate or a, you know, a midshipman or a cadet, and you're not fully in uniform yet, but you're thinking ahead to where you're going to be 6 months or 16 months or 60 months from now, find someone who's out there who's interested in real estate and wants to know more about it and share this episode with them. All right, so that's going to do it for this week. Thanks again for tuning in. And until next time, stay financially fit and mission ready.